Chapter 2. Leatherhead is about 20 kilometers from Maybury Hill. We got there without any problems at about 9 o'clock. The horse had an hour's rest while I had supper with my cousins and left my wife with them. My wife was silent during the drive to Leatherhead and seemed extremely worried. I tried to comfort her, but she gave short answers. If I had not promised the innkeeper to bring back his cart, she would have made me stay in Leatherhead that night. I wish I had. Her face, I remember, was very white as I left her. But I had been very excited all day, and I was not very sorry that I had to return to Maybury that night. I was even afraid that those last shots I had heard had killed the Martians. I wanted to be there when it happened. The night was unexpectedly dark. It was as hot as the day. Overhead, the clouds were moving fast, mixed with black and red smoke. Ripley Street was deserted, and the village showed no sign of life. As I climbed the little hill beyond the church, I saw the trees shaking with the wind, a sign that a storm was coming. Then I heard the church bell strike midnight and saw Maybury Hill, with its treetops and roofs black and sharp against the red sky. As I looked, a bright green light lit the road around me and showed the distant woods to the north. I saw a line of green fire pass through the clouds and fall into the field to my left. It was the third cylinder. Suddenly, the first lightning of the storm came, and the thunder burst like a rocket in the sky. The horse jumped forward and started running. As we went galloping towards Maybury Hill, there came flashes of lightning followed by thunder crashes one after the other, sounding like an enormous electric machine. The flashing light was blinding and confusing, and a thin rain started as I drove towards the hill. At first, I did not pay attention to the road. Then I noticed something on the opposite side of Maybury Hill. I thought it was the wet roof of a house, but the lightning flashes showed that it was something moving rapidly, and then, in a flash like daylight, I was able to see this strange object, clear and bright. This thing I saw, how can I describe it? A monstrous tripod, higher than many houses, stepping over the young trees. It was a walking engine of shining metal. Then suddenly, the trees in the wood ahead of me were parted, and a second huge tripod appeared, rushing straight towards me. And I was moving fast to meet it. I panicked and pulled the horse's head hard round to the right. The cart turned over on the horse and smashed noisily. I was thrown sideways and fell into a shallow pool of water. I crawled out almost immediately and hid under a bush. The horse did not move. His neck was broken, poor thing. By the lightning flashes, I saw the enormous machine walk past me and go uphill. As it passed, it made a deafening noise that was even louder than the thunder. "Halloo! Halloo!" In a minute, it was with another one, a kilometer away, bending over something in the field. I have no doubt this thing in the field was the third of the cylinders they had fired at us from Mars. I was wet with rain above and puddle water below. It took some time for me to get over my shock and struggle up into a drier position and think of the danger I was in. I got up at last and managed to crawl towards the woods towards Maybury. I went on, wet and shaking, towards my own house. If I had fully understood the meaning of the things I had seen, I would have immediately gone back to my wife in Leatherhead. But what had happened was all very strange, and I was too exhausted, hurt, wet and deafened and blinded by the storm. All I could think of was to go to my own house. I walked through the trees and got to the path that led up to my house. Near the top, I came upon something soft and, by a flash of lightning, saw a body. I had never touched a dead body before. With difficulty, I turned him over to feel for his heart. He was indeed dead. When the lightning flashed again, I saw his face. It was the landlord of the inn. I left him and moved on up the hill. Towards Maybury Bridge, there were voices and the sound of feet, but I did not have the courage to shout or go to them. I reached my house, went in, and locked the door. I sat down at the bottom of the stairs, shaking violently. After a time, I realized that I was cold and wet. I got up almost mechanically and changed my clothes. I went upstairs to my study. The window looks over the trees and the railway towards Horsell Common. In the hurry of leaving, this window had been left open. I stopped in the doorway and looked. The thunderstorm had passed. The towers of the Oriental College and the trees around it had gone. Very far away, lit by a red flame, the common was visible. I could see huge black shapes, ugly and strange, moving busily. I closed the door and approached the window. Now I could see the houses around Woking Station on one side, and the burnt woods of Byfleet on the other. There was a light down below the hill, on the railway, and several houses were burning. Between them there were areas of burning and smoking ground. It was a very strange view. This was the little world in which I had been living safely for years, this fiery chaos. I turned my desk chair to the window, sat down and stared at the country, and at the three enormous black things that were moving around the common. They seemed very busy. I began to ask myself what they could be. Were they intelligent machines? I felt that was impossible. Did a Martian sit inside each machine, controlling it, just like a man's brain controls his body? The storm had left the sky clear, and over the smoke of the burning land, the little bright light of Mars was dropping into the west. That was when a soldier came into my garden. I heard footsteps and looked down and saw him climbing over the fence. I leaned out of the window. "Psst," I said, in a whisper. He stopped. Then he walked across the lawn to the house. "Who's there?" he said, also whispering, standing under the window and looking up. "Are you trying to hide?" "Yes." "Come into the house," I said. I went down, unlocked the door, and let him in. I could not see his face. He had no hat, and his coat was unbuttoned. "What has happened?" I asked. "What hasn't?" he replied. "They destroyed us. Simply destroyed us," he repeated again and again. He followed me into the dining room. I made some tea and poured him a cup. He sat down and drank it. Then suddenly he put his head on his arms and began to cry like a little boy. It was a long time before he was able to answer my questions, and then he gave confusing answers. He was a driver in the artillery and had come into action about 7 when shooting was going on across the common. There was an explosion and he was thrown into a hole in the ground and found himself lying under dead men and horses. He hid there for a long time. He watched as the soldiers rushed towards the tripod and were killed. Then the monster began to walk across the common. A kind of arm carried a metallic case, out of which the heat ray flashed. In a few minutes there was not a living thing left on the common, and every bush and tree was burning. The giant then turned to Woking Station and the houses around it, and in a moment the town was completely destroyed. The artilleryman was able to crawl towards Horsell and escape to Woking. There were a few people alive there. Many were burnt. He hid behind a broken wall as one of the Martian tripods returned. He saw the giant catch a man in one of its steel tentacles and knock his head against a tree. After nightfall, the artilleryman ran away and went across the railway. That was the story I got from him, bit by bit. He grew calmer, telling me. He had not eaten since midday, so I found some meat and bread and brought it into the room. As he talked, morning came and I could now see his face, blackened and exhausted, as no doubt mine was too. When we finished eating, we went upstairs to my study, and I looked out of the open window. In one night, the valley had become a valley of death. The fires had died down. There was smoke where there were flames before. The ruins of the broken houses and the blackened trees looked terrible in the light of dawn. This was pure and total destruction, never before seen in the history of war. And shining with the growing light of the east, Three of the tripods stood around the pit. As the dawn grew brighter, we went very quietly downstairs. The soldier agreed with me that the house was no place to stay. He wanted to go to London and rejoin his company. My plan was to return at once to Leatherhead. I would take my wife to New Haven and leave the country as soon as possible. I thought that the area around London would inevitably be the scene of a battle. However, between us and Leatherhead was the third cylinder. If I had been alone, I would have tried to go across country. But the soldier stopped me. "It's no kindness to your wife to get killed," he said. In the end, I agreed to go with him northward, under cover of the woods. I would leave him on the way and get to Leatherhead. I wanted to set off at once, but the artilleryman knew better than that. He made me look through the house and find food and drink. We filled our pockets and left the house. We ran as quickly as we could down the road. The houses seemed deserted. Except for us, there did not seem to be a living thing on Maybury Hill. Most of the inhabitants had escaped, or they had hidden. We went down the lane and into the woods at the foot of the hill. The woods on the railway line were burnt and blackened. There was not a breath of wind this morning, and everything was strangely still. Even the birds were quiet. After a time, we came to the road and saw three soldiers on horseback, riding slowly towards Woking. We shouted and hurried towards them. One of them was an officer. "You are the first men I've seen coming this way this morning," he said. "What's happening?" The artilleryman stepped up and saluted. "Gun destroyed last night, sir. Have been hiding, trying to rejoin my company, sir. You'll come in sight of the Martians about a kilometer along this road." "What are they like?" asked the officer. "Metallic giants, sir. 30 meters high, three legs and an enormous head, sir." "What nonsense," said the officer. "You'll see, sir. They carry a kind of box, sir, that shoots fire and strikes you dead."
"What do you mean? A gun?"
"No, sir," said the soldier, and he described the heat ray. Halfway through, the officer interrupted him and looked at me. He could not believe what he was hearing. "It's perfectly true," I said.
"Well, I suppose it's my business to see it too," said the officer.
"Look here," he said to the soldier. "You'd better go and report yourself to Brigadier General Marvin and tell him all you know. He's at Weybridge. Do you know the way?"
"I do," I said, and he turned his horse southward again. He thanked me, and the three men rode away. By Byfleet Station, we came out from the trees and found the country calm and peaceful. We were far away from the heat ray, and it almost seemed like any other Sunday, except for the empty houses, the people packing, and the groups of soldiers standing on the bridge. However, Byfleet was chaotic. People were preparing to leave, and soldiers, some on horseback, were giving instructions and helping them load the vehicles. There were lots of people, and most of them were wearing their best clothes. The soldiers were having the greatest difficulty in making them realize the seriousness of the situation. An old man with a huge box and several flower pots of orchids was arguing with a soldier. "Do you know what's over there?" I asked him, pointing at the trees that hid the Martians.
"Eh?" he said. "I was explaining that these are valuable."
"Death!" I shouted. "Death is coming! Death!" The soldier and I arrived at Weybridge. The whole place was in such confusion as I had never seen. Carts and carriages everywhere, people packing, children excited. We sat on the step of the drinking fountain and ate some of the food we had brought with us. Soldiers were telling people to move now or to hide in their cellars as soon as the firing began. We saw a crowd of people in and around the railway station. We remained at Weybridge until midday, and we found ourselves at the place where the Riverway joins the River Thames. Here we found an excited and noisy crowd of people. People were hiring boats to cross the river. There was no panic yet, but there were already far more people than all the boats could carry. There was a lot of shouting. Every now and then people would look nervously across the way, towards Chertsey, but everything over there was still. Across the Thames, everything was quiet. The people who landed there from the boats were walking away. The big ferryboat had just made a journey. Three or four soldiers stood staring. Suddenly, there was a sound. "What's that?" cried a boatman. Then the sound came again from the direction of Chertsey, the sound of a gun. Almost immediately, heavy gunfire followed. The guns were unseen because of the trees. Everyone stood still, trying to hear the sound of battle, near us, but invisible to us. Then suddenly we saw a cloud of smoke far away up the river. The ground moved, and a heavy explosion shook the air, smashing two or three windows in the houses. "Here they are," shouted a man. "There, do you see them?" One after the other, one, two, three, four of the Martian machines appeared, far away over the trees towards Chertsey. Then a fifth one appeared, coming rapidly towards us. Their metal bodies shone in the sun as they moved towards the guns, growing larger and larger as they came nearer. One on the left held a huge case high in the air, and the terrible heat ray I had seen on Friday night flashed towards Chertsey and struck the town. The crowd near the water's edge seemed to be completely shocked for a moment. There was no screaming or shouting, but a silence. Then came the sound of people talking and the movement of feet. A man carrying a large bag turned around and hit me with it. A woman pushed me and ran. I had one thing on my mind: to get underwater. "Get underwater," I shouted, but no one listened to me. I turned around and rushed towards the approaching Martian, ran right down the stony beach and jumped into the water. Others did the same. The stones under my feet were muddy and slippery, and the river was so low that I ran perhaps 5 meters to get under the surface. I heard people jumping into the river from the boats, but the Martian machine took no notice of the people running around. When I raised my head above water, the Martian's head was turned towards the guns that were still firing across the river. It was raising the case which generated the heat ray. Suddenly, the 6 guns which had been hidden behind the village fired simultaneously. The first shell exploded 6 meters above its head. I gave a cry of astonishment. Then 2 other shells exploded in the air near its body. The 4th shell exploded on its face. The head flashed and burst into 12 pieces of red flesh and metal. "Hit!" I shouted. I heard answering shouts from the people in the water around me. The headless giant regained its balance and moved slowly towards Shepperton. The living intelligence, the Martian inside the head, was dead, and the thing was now simply a metal machine. It hit the church tower and knocked it down. Then it turned and collapsed with great force into the river. A violent explosion shook the air, and water, steam, mud, and pieces of metal flew up into the sky. A huge wave of very hot water came sweeping from the river. I saw people struggling to get out of the water and heard their screaming and shouting. I swam through the water. The fallen Martian came into sight downstream, most of it under the water. Thick clouds of steam were pouring off it, and I could vaguely see the enormous legs and tentacles moving in the water. It looked like some wounded thing struggling for its life in the water. Suddenly I heard a desperate scream and turned. A man, knee-deep in the water, shouted to me and pointed. I did not hear what he said. I looked back and saw the other Martians approaching down the riverbank from the direction of Chertsey. The guns had no effect this time. I went underwater and, holding my breath, swam painfully under the surface as long as I could. The water was rough and was growing hotter and hotter. For a moment I raised my head to take a breath. I saw the steam rising in a white fog that hid the Martians. The noise was deafening. Then I saw them, enormous grey figures. They had passed by me, and two were bending over the dead one. The third and fourth Martian stood beside him in the water. The heat ray generators were waved high, and the beams flashed this way and that. The air was full of deafening and confusing noises, the metallic sounds of the Martians, the crash of falling houses, the trees and fences catching fire. Thick black smoke mixed with the steam from the river. For a moment I stood there, in the almost boiling water, shocked and hopeless of escape. I could see the people who had been with me in the river struggling to get out of the water, like little frogs. Then suddenly, the white flashes of the heat ray came towards me. The houses were destroyed at its touch. The trees caught fire with a loud noise. The heat ray went up and down and came down to the water's edge 50 meters from where I stood. It swept across the river, and the water behind it boiled. I turned towards the shore. In another moment, the huge wave rushed towards me. I screamed and ran through towards the shore, burnt and in pain. I fell helplessly on the stony beach. I was now completely visible to the Martians. I expected nothing but death. I vaguely remember the foot of a Martian coming down within 20 meters of my head, moving straight into the stones, and then the four Martians carrying the remains of the dead one, moving further and further away from me across the river and fields. And then, very slowly, I realized that by a miracle I had escaped. The Martians went back to their original position on Horsell Common. If they had left the dead giant in the river and pushed on, they would certainly have reached London before anyone heard about them coming, and they would have caused complete destruction. But they were not in a hurry. Every 24 hours a new cylinder arrived from Mars. Meanwhile, the military authorities worked desperately. Every minute another gun was placed into position, and before sunset, there was a gun in every wooded area, behind every house and on every hill. But the Martians now understood our weapons, and no one attempted to get within a kilometer of the cylinders. The giants spent the earlier part of the afternoon in transferring everything from the second and third cylinders to the pit on Horsell Common. Later, they all went into the pit and were hard at work there far into the night. The thick green smoke could be seen from far away. And while the Martians were preparing for their next attack, and humanity was preparing for the battle, I painfully made my way towards London. I saw an empty boat moving downstream, and taking off my wet clothes, I went after it. I climbed on it and, using my hands, I moved down the river towards Walton, going very slowly and frequently looking behind me. I went on like this for a long time, exhausted and in pain. The sun burnt my back. At last, the bridge at Walton came into sight, and I landed on the Middlesex bank and lay down, deadly sick, in the long grass. I suppose it was about 4 or 5 o'clock. After a short time, I got up, walked perhaps a kilometer without meeting anyone, and then lay down again in the shadow of the bushes. I seem to remember talking to myself. I was also very thirsty. I felt angry with my wife. I cannot explain it, but my wish to reach Leatherhead worried me very much. I do not remember the arrival of the curates. I noticed a sitting figure with his face staring at the sky. The sun was setting behind rows of puffy clouds. I sat up, and hearing me move, he looked at me. "Do you have any water?" I asked. He shook his head. "You have been asking for water for the last hour," he said. For a moment we were silent, looking at each other. I am sure that I looked very strange, burnt and blackened by the smoke and wearing only trousers and socks. He had large blue eyes, blankly staring. He spoke suddenly, looking away from me. "What does it mean?" he said. "What do these things mean?" I stared at him and gave no answer. "Why are these things allowed? What have we done?" The morning service was over. I was walking through the roads to clear my brain, and then fire, earthquake, death. All our work destroyed. All the work. What are these Martians? What are we? I answered, clearing my throat. He held his knees and turned to look at me again. For half a minute he stared silently. I was walking through the roads to clear my brain, he said. And suddenly, fire, earthquake, death. He fell silent. Then he began waving his hand. What have we done? What has Weybridge done? Everything gone, everything destroyed. The church, we rebuilt it only 3 years ago. Gone. Why? Another pause, and he shouted again like a madman. The smoke of her burning goes up forever and ever. He pointed in the direction of Weybridge. It was clear that he had escaped Weybridge. The great tragedy he went through had driven him to the edge of madness. Are we far from Sunbury? I asked. What are we going to do? He asked. Are these creatures everywhere? Has the earth been given to them? Things have changed, I said quietly. You must stay calm. There is still hope. Hope? Yes, a lot of hope. But how can we escape? He asked. They are unbeatable and unforgiving. The stronger they are, the more careful and sensible we should be, I answered. One of them was killed 3 hours ago. Killed, he said. I saw it happen. And I told him what I had seen. As I spoke, he jumped to his feet and stopped me. Listen, he said. From beyond the low hills across the water came the dull sound of guns and a strange crying. Then everything was still. High in the west, the moon hung pale above the smoke and the hot, still sunset. We had better follow this path, I said. Northward.